Radio.
I think the boys are going to like it today.
Yeah.
You know why?
Because we're drunk as skunks.
Well, we're drunk as fuck. Yeah, but we moved them, you see. We took them out of one room and we brought them into this room.
Yeah.
It has a window.
And the window, they can see the world.
See the world. They got light. They're going to love it. They're going to be so happy. Hey, guys.
This guy.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
Oh, Jason, look, we can see the world.
Yeah, so we're in here today.
Yeah, we decided to move you in because you deserve to see some shit.
You know what? I don't even know what country I'm from anymore, mate.
I don't think you knew to start, sir.
You won't take my chair, just wipe off the cat shit.
Hey, you listen to him, he's got it right.
What are we even doing? Why do we still do this?
Jason, we are literally billionaires.
Yes.
And we come to this shack.
I know.
To record. I think maybe we just want to be back with our roots.
You guys understand, this is where real podcasting was born. This was a shack in 2003. Adam Curry, the Podfather, you know him.
I mean, I've heard of him. I used to listen to No Agenda when I was younger and stupider.
Yeah, that guy. He flew his plane, you see. He got really high. He flew his plane. He landed in the backyard. He came to the shack.
Right.
And he did his first podcast.
Let me tell you something about podcasts, okay?
Yeah, you tell him.
This is where it all started. Conan has a friend. Where was he when we needed one?
Conan, we always loved you, and you abandoned us. And you took over podcasting. You took all these people that have been podcasting for 15 years and you said, you know what? I can do it better. And you know what? You do it pretty good, Conan. But fuck off.
But fuck off, Conan.
Fuck off.
All right.
Be more for it, Conan. All right.
Get these guys out of here.
Guys, you gotta go. We'll be
back. Bernie for Prime Minister.
I don't think
that can happen.
I mean, you'd have to live here a while and he's pretty old. I don't think he could make it long enough.
Not with that attitude, Jason.
No, it's true. Maybe he'll never die. I'd like to think that Bernie Sanders will never die. He's just too stubborn.
That's the only way he's ever going to become
president.
But the
problem is he's a good man, and somehow he hasn't died young.
To Mount Virginia, don't say way.
I don't want to get sued.
I was going to say, you're not going to get sued with that kind of approach to, was it Billy Joel, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
In the vein of Billy Joel.
Well, I'm Brendan.
Whoa!
No,
whoa.
I'm Brendan. I'm Brendan.
I'm Jason.
And
don't confuse.
Welcome
those.
To Billy Joel Cast.
Brendan, Jason, Billy Joel. That's right. Why I did it. Rope you in. Hook them while they're young, mm-hmm. as they say.
No, I'm just pulling your leg, Brendan. I'm Jason.
Oh, so I'm Jason?
No.
Oh, I'm Brendan.
You're Brendan.
You're Jason.
I'm Jason.
I'm Brendan. You're Brendan. I'm Jason.
No.
Let's
start off.
We are.
I'm Jason.
I'm. We are Brendan and Jason.
We are Brendan and Jason, and this is
a podcast
called
For Screen
and Country.
And what's it about?
Well, we talk about British films.
This is the worst intro we've ever done.
We got to mix it up sometimes. You know, we can repeat ourselves. We get into that counter conversation of you know that's repeated time and time again. But that's not what we're about on a Brit pick.
Okay.
I'm saying it right now, out of the gate, before I even do the thing. It's a Brit pick.
This is a mess.
Normally, what we do is we go through the British Film Institute's top 100 list of the 100 greatest British films of all time, as ordained by our Lord Jesus Christ in the year 1999, with the help of the board of the British Film Institute. But this week, that's not what we're doing. We are doing something called Brit Picks. And on Brit Picks, we pick the movies, and you listen to us talk about the movies. So this week, it is Brendan's pick. Last week, Brendan, we did my pick.
Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Kingsman: The Secret Service, which I had not seen and was happy that I enjoyed so much, despite its Tory predilections. Mm. But this week, it's Brendan's choice. And Brendan, the movie that we're going to do this week is...
American Beauty!
Oh, I didn't watch that one.
Oh.
I mean, I did years ago, but it's been a while. I remember there was a bag, and there was Kevin Spacey, and he was fucking a teenage girl,
you know,
I think.
What? You know what? Nope. Nope. Let's just get right off
that. All right, let's move on.
We don't want to get keywords. Keyworded with those there. You know, podtranscripts.net. No, we are talking about, I selected 2011 sci-fi action comedy thriller. It's called Attack the Block.
The movie that introduced us to that one too. Young John Boyega.
Yes, young John Boyega, who, of course, you all will know as Finn from the Star Wars films.
Real fucking cool dude.
The new ones. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a dude who sacrificed almost his career to go out and be very public in recent months.
I hope it doesn't work out bad for him. I hope
He was just up for a Golden Globe.
He should be. He's a great actor.
Yeah. The Golden Globes, by the way, the only legitimate award show.
That's right. The only people that matter, Brendan, are the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Presided over by 86 old white men.
I think there's some non-whites in there. No.
It was revealed 86.
I thought it was the Hollywood Foreign Press.
You would, right? No, 86 white people. I think there might be some females, but they're all white. But if you can be Chadwick Boseman and win in that field, you're on the right path.
Well, I mean, yes. Chadwick, don't get me wrong. Chadwick Boseman is wonderful.
You have a great career ahead of you.
If you die before an award is awarded, you do get a substantially increased chance. I'm not saying he didn't deserve the award. He probably did.
I was just going to say, I have
same with the, what's his face?
I have seen the movie that he's in, and it's good. He's amazing.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. Heath Ledger, I think, also deserved it.
You know, I don't think you hear what I'm saying, Brennan. What I'm saying is that you, the audience, if you're up for an award and you really want to win it, just die. That's all you got to do.
It's like that Dana Carvey sketch. Derek, what would really work for us is if you were dead. Album sales would soar. Anyway,
this guy in his Saturday Night Live, you know, you think I'm bad with Star Trek. This guy with SNL, come on.
So we haven't started this podcast
yet. No, why would we?
We're talking about Attack the Block. Jason, you had never seen this movie before. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Any expectations going into this?
Well, I knew that it was about a bunch of street toughs that fight aliens. That's basically the extent of it. Okay. I knew John Boyega was in it. I knew it was kind of his breakout movie. I knew it was British, so I was down for that. But that's literally all I knew about it.
Okay. The first time I saw this, I think it was... Was it for like a horror-themed month that I was doing? I don't know. It might have been. Either way, the first time I saw this, I knew absolutely nothing about it. I think I knew that John Boyega was in it, and that was it.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was an alien movie. So going into this completely fresh, I mean, I don't want to spoil and get to the end, but I was blown away by what I saw, and it stuck with me. So that's one of the first things I thought of when we decided to bring back the Brit picks.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Boyega. The man, the myth, the legend.
Here he is in all his glory. Now,
Sarasota, Florida. What?
Give me a sec here. Hey, Google.
No, I can tell you. Are you asking how old he is?
Yeah.
He was 18.
He was 18 when he did it. Okay. Because he says he's 15 in the movie.
Yes. And he does look a little bit older than that. But he looks older than 18, too. Like, he looks like an adult in this movie.
I think that might be part of a comment. Unfortunately, for young black men, they are often perceived as older than white kids simply. Mm-hmm. Because of their race.
And, or if you're a British white person, you're often perceived as much older than you are.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But obviously, that's one of the things that I noticed in this movie, is that when he says he's 15, it is a bit of a shock, because mm-hmm. you don't think that he's that young at all.
Well, yeah, and criticism maybe at people like maturing in those situations probably way too early, right?
Mm-hmm. But we'll get there.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about this movie, Attack the Block, 2011. Mm-hmm. I will run down some of the cast, but I mean, you're only going to know John Boyega and a couple others, I think. So we got John Boyega as Moses. That's his name in the movie. Mm-hmm. He is a member of a gang. I mean, they're not like a vicious gang. They're going around.
Well, they pull a knife on a lady.
But I don't think they ever intend to use violence on innocent people.
Well, the threat of violence is more than enough, Brendan.
I'm not saying they're good. I'm just saying, you know, they're not like the Clockwork Orange gang.
Put these ruffians in jail is what I'm saying.
Oh, no. Get off the podcast, Winston Churchill.
Goodbye. No, I'm Winston Churchill. I don't know who that twit was, but I'm Winston Churchill, and I would like to say that I have no comment on this film because I'm dead. Goodbye.
Just like
I wonder which one he's in. Because I feel like he would hate Republicans from America, but he would also really not like the Irish. So I don't know where... Maybe he's in the foyer. Is Winston Churchill the fucking greeter in the foyer of heaven?
Could be. Hello, welcome to heaven.
Welcome to heaven. I'm Winston Churchill. You might remember me from the war.
It's either Winston Churchill or Wilford Brimley. They switch shifts.
Oh, yeah. You gotta have that... Oh, man. Wouldn't it be so nice to die and come to heaven and there's... Welcome to heaven. I'm Wilford Brimley. Would you like a bowl of oatmeal?
You no longer have to worry about diabetes.
No more. No, you remember when you were old, now you can be young again. I think that's a Cocoon reference. I've never seen it.
As far as I know, the young ones always die young. Is that right, Billy? That's right. Wait, Billy Joel, you're not dead. Gotta go.
Well, God. Billy Joel's in and out. You know, he's had so many close experiences. He's just been in and out.
So going through the rest of this cast... We have Jodie Whittaker, who plays Samantha.
Okay, so throughout this entire movie, Brendan, yeah. I was like, who's this woman? I know who she is. She's Doctor fucking Who, of course. Why would I not know that?
The current one?
Yes.
Wait a second, Doctor Who is a woman?
I know. Who'd have thunk it? But they broke that barrier, they broke that ceiling, and I like Jodie Whittaker a lot. She's really fun.
There you go. Rounding out some of John Boyega's...
Cohorts. Comrades?
We have Alex Esmail as Pest, Franz Drame as Dennis, Leon James as Jerome, Simon Howard as Biggs, and of course, the last couple people I want to mention is Luke Treadaway as Bruis, a guy who is stoned throughout the entire film, and of course, our friend, we haven't talked about on this podcast, but our friend, Nick Frost,
we love him.
Plays Ron, a local drug dealer.
As I said to Brendan earlier, if you took Brendan and you beat him to death with a baseball bat, well, didn't beat him to death, didn't kill him. Beat his face in with a baseball bat and then let him heal. About 6 months after that, he'd look like Nick Frost.
You know, I had Nick Frost set up for an interview next week, and now it looks like...
sorry. Also, want to talk about Luke Treadaway for a sec. Okay. First off, in this movie, I feel like he's doing a Hugh Grant. It's great, but he's very Hugh Grant-y.
Okay.
And when I'm watching this, I'm looking at this dude and I'm thinking, I know who he is. I recognize him. I don't know where I know him from.
Sorry, when you said Hugh Granny, I just thought about Hugh Grant playing a granny.
Oh,
it made
please,
me laugh.
Please, Hugh, if you're listening, please do that. I want to see a movie where you play somebody's grandmother. But so Luke Treadaway, I'm looking at this guy's face. He looks very familiar. I know I've seen him in something recently.
It was Nanny McPhee starring Hugh Grant.
Yes, the reboot we've always wanted.
Sorry.
Continue. Luke Treadaway.
Yes.
So I look through his filmography, don't recognize anything.
Okay.
Turns out, though, Luke Treadaway has a twin brother, an identical twin brother named Harry Treadaway, and Harry Treadaway, try that again, and Harry Treadaway played the Romulan Narek in the most recent Star Trek show, Star Trek Picard.
Wow, that is quite a journey.
It was a long way to go and a short time to get there, but we got there. And yeah, they are identical, so his face looks so familiar. But yeah, it was because it was his brother.
Okay.
Yeah. I wonder why they were probably too young, but they probably should have hired those dudes to play the Winklevoss twins since they're actual twins. Why would you give Armie Hammer a single paycheck when you could give two working actors two paychecks? That's fucking horse shit.
I mean,
talk about cultural appropriation. The culture of the twins.
You mean actual cannibal Armie Hammer?
Yeah. He's the new actual cannibal.
If the 6 day has taught me anything, it's that if you play two roles, you could potentially get two paychecks.
Yes, folks, that was a 6 day reference here on For Screen and Country. Courtesy of Brennan and the madness that is his other podcast.
Yeah, and just like movies that I just watch.
You just watch the 6 day just for fun?
No, that was for a reason.
Yeah.
Not the Banana Splits movie, though.
Yeah, I watched you've that never for fun. Seen the 6 day before?
No.
Now, how is the 6 day relevant to this movie?
It's not, so let's get back to it.
No aliens in the 6 day?
No.
Okay.
No. Dolls that are really creepy.
Oh.
That are supposed to be for children. Anyway, go listen to that on another podcast.
Are they
podcast.
For sex?
No, but Michael Rapaport does fuck a virtual girlfriend.
Ooh, that's not somebody I want to see fuck anybody.
No, you don't. It's PG-13. We need to get on track.
Fucking gingers, man.
We talked right. about the cast in this movie. Jason could say that because he is.
I am a ginger, thank you.
We talked about the cast in this movie. So this movie, what this movie is about is it's pretty basic. It's essentially an alien invasion in a block... In a certain, neighborhood block in London. majority black people that live there in this block. We meet our hero at first. The way the film frames it is you think that Jodie Whittaker is going to be the lead, right? Because we start with her.
Yeah.
We see her get mugged by like a gang of people, and they're not all black. I'm not saying that. There's like, you know, there's some white.
It's mostly black.
It's mostly black. It's a heavy black neighborhood, and I'm stressing this because the movie does comment on.
Yes.
This stuff a lot.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, she's mugged, and in the middle of this kind of mugging, it seems like a firework just crashes into a car, and they find out these are aliens, and they're all over town.
Yeah, this isn't like a firework just exploding. This is a fucking like meteor that comes down and just slams into a car, crashes through the roof of it, leaves a hole, and because a creature emerges.
Because at the same time, we see that people somewhere are launching fireworks up into the air.
Now, let's be clear. This creature, Brendan, is the size of about a good-sized dog. This is not War of the Worlds. There's not a tripod that comes out of the crown. This is just this weird little dog-looking creature that if any of you out there have played Half-Life, in the original Half-Life, the kind of like weird dog-like creatures remind me of this thing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it said in the film that it moves like a gorilla. Hmm. And to me, it looks like the outline.
Well,
like
this first one they find is a little bit different.
Yeah, but it looks to me like the silhouette of a critter.
Hmm. Yeah, kind of.
From Critters.
So anyways, this alien shows up, and of course, they're a bunch of kids. So what do? They want to kill it. Because it attacks Moses right at the gate, and he immediately is like, well, I gotta kill this thing.
And he has this like scar on his face for this.
Yeah, it's like fucking it cool scar.
Yeah.
Fucking cool scar.
Yeah.
So they follow it into like a shed, and then we see the outside of the shed as they just beat the fuck out of this thing and kill it. And then drag it home as a trophy. I love the idea they're just dragging an alien down the street.
Yeah, they've got it on. He's got it on his back like a fucking knapsack.
Yeah.
Maybe we should listen to a clip of this scene because it really kind of establishes in a like it really like does a really good job of establishing the camaraderie between these guys, and they're like their gang or whatever. Let's take a listen.
You know what that is? I'll tell you what that is. That's an alien, bruv. Believe it. Must have come from outer space trying to take over the Earth, innit? When I landed in the wrong place, though, you get the wrong place.
Welcome to London, motherfucker.
Welcome to the ends, brother.
This is the block, fam. Nobody fucks with the block, you get me? The B-L-O-C-K.
Wow, that went off without a hitch.
Here we are, 15 minutes later.
Yeah. but yeah, so then you get the sense of their camaraderie right away, right? The sense of their... because I mean, in this movie, you kind of get the idea if you didn't know anything about going in, because I didn't know who the bad guys were, I didn't know there were gangs or whatever, right? So I'm thinking like, oh, okay, it's another movie where we're like demonizing urban youth and having them be like these gangsters, and this woman, we're gonna follow her all around town, and she tries to escape the aliens. Maybe eventually they're gonna work together, but ultimately our sympathy is gonna be with the woman.
Yeah, it's Death Wish, but with Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But not the case.
No.
They do a nice little 180 where the movie starts where she's like walking around. It's kind of like a horror movie because you're kind of like, oh, what's lurking around the corner? Yeah. And then those guys come around the corner. They are, you know, our gang, and they, you know, mug her and take her ring and everything. But then the movie does a complete 180 because suddenly we're like with them trying to hunt these aliens, right?
Yeah. They kind of... And part of it, too, actually, is later on when they realize that she lives in the same council estate that they live in. It's like, oh, we wouldn't have attacked you if we knew you were from the block, which is not a great, you know, justification, but...
Well, she even calls him on that because she's like, wait, so you wouldn't have... So you would have attacked me if I wasn't from here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about this, too, is especially this scene, is hearing their kind of back and forth, the way they talk to each other. What I love about this movie is how authentic these kids feel.
Yeah.
They feel like a group of teenage boys. They've got all the confidence in the world. They talk shit to each other. And, you know, where adults in this movie, even older people in this movie, have trouble, like, even, like, coming to terms with the fact that there's aliens around, These guys just go with it from the start. It's because they're young. They've got those kids' minds. They're just like, okay, so it's aliens. So what do we got to do? We got to fucking kill them. Well, we want to kill them.
That's I like that, too, because in a typical movie like this, with like an alien invasion, you have those moments of people being like, oh, my God, and they're being scared. You know, half the movie is them like hiding and cowering, and then the other half is like them fighting back. This movie immediately is like, no, fuck these guys.
Exactly, because they kill one right out of the gate, so that gets their confidence up. And then they're a bunch of teenage boys. They're gang. They're in this gang. They fucking rob people. They've got all the bravado in the world. It's, yeah, of course we're going to go out. They have the same fantasy that many people that live in, like, zombie movies have, where it's like, I want to be able to kill without any consequence.
It's also funny you mentioned, too, about how this feels so genuine. The director of this movie, Joe Cornish, he actually went to, he actually interviewed a bunch of different kids in youth groups and asked them, point blank, if there was an alien, if there was a real alien invasion in your town, what weapons would you use?
Yeah.
Like, what would be your weapon of choice?
And, exactly.
And it was to find that out, but also to kind of get like an idea of their personalities.
Yes.
Which I think bleeds into this idea of all these characters feeling genuine. I feel like, now I don't know this, I didn't look it up per se, but I feel like some of these actors had to be either living in or have lived in these similar environments.
Yeah, they certainly had the accents down, bruv.
Oh, yeah. I had the subtitles on. Trust me. These accents are thick.
I was raw-dogging it. No subtitles for me.
He also, Joe Cornish also wanted to counter this trend of, like, hoodie horror films. Like, you know, with all these guys, like, a scary hoodie or a mask.
Yeah.
And kind of turn it on its head. And because he felt that they kind of demonized, like, urban youth, right?
Absolutely.
And just a quick note, we'll talk about Bruce, obviously, but Joe Cornish said Bruce is basically him in his 20s.
Yeah, the rich kid who's getting stoned all the time.
Yeah, who has one of my favorite scenes in this entire movie is when he's just like lumbering through the halls. He sees this guy come out of an elevator with just like a shit ton of blood, gets into another elevator, all these other guys come, the gang all squeeze in, and they're talking about aliens, and he at one point he's just like, guys, I'm so fucking high. What's going on? Yeah. Like, that'd be my reaction, I think, if I was in that situation.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
there's
absolutely
so much happening right now.
Oh, Christ. I don't know if this... So, yeah, you talk about their weapons. I thought that was interesting because, you know, they've got a baseball bat.
Super soakers. Those little kids.
The little kid has a super soaker and a cap gun.
Yeah.
But the one that gets me is the... So, I don't remember what his name is, but he's the dude that has the scooter.
Okay.
He has a katana. Of course he does. Because he goes, and this is one of the things about this movie too, is that these guys aren't just hood toughs. They get humanized.
They're kind of nerds. Some of them are nerds.
Some of them are kind of nerds. But the moment of humanization kind of across the board is when they all run home to get weapons.
Yeah.
And dude runs in and he has three katanas on the wall, like mounted like any sort of fucking weeb would. And he grabs one and he takes it. And then he goes back and grabs another one, or grabs the bigger one.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if he specifically is an anime nerd because he grabs a katana, number one. He's riding on a red scooter, and he's riding on that red scooter with the katana up. It was giving me real, like, Akira vibes, like, which I know you haven't seen, but is one of the great animes from the late 80s. And Akira, similarly, is, you know, drives a red motorcycle and has a katana and a helmet and everything. And it really called back to that for me.
Well, there's another part of that, too, because there's a line where John Boyega says to him, go home and watch Naruto.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, that ties into that too, right?
I thought he said that, or didn't he say that to the kids, the little kids?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Either way, yes, another anime reference for sure.
I want to say too that actually that genuine, that humanizing moment rather, comes even earlier for me, I think. It's the scene where they've just mugged this lady, they've killed that alien, they're on the lookout for the other aliens, and some of them are just calling their mom.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, Mom, I'm going to be out. Yes, I'll be home by 10. Like, makes... And then you're like, holy shit, these are kids.
Is that Briggs or Biggs, that guy?
Yeah.
The dude with the fro that spends most of the movie in a bin?
Yeah. But it makes you realize, right? You're like, holy shit, these are kids. These are children. Like, John Boyega's playing a character who's 15 years old. That's a young, young child.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. We forget that sometimes. But yeah, those are kids. And they're reacting exactly how teenagers in that position, I imagine, would react. Just ready to go.
I was also kind of surprised that, you know, some of them were picked off.
Yeah. Two of them were picked off. I was surprised that they killed a couple of them.
Because, I mean, they're kids.
They are kids. So let's talk a little bit about the aliens.
Oh, yeah. Well, we describe them, what they kind of look like.
Yeah, I'll have to show you a clip here in a minute, Brendan, but these aliens are straight reminiscent of a game from the early 90s called Out of This World.
Okay.
Which was a early Interplay kind of cinematic platformer type thing, and it had aliens it had a monster in that was very similar, where it was kind of this hulking thing. It was kind of skinny but also like big at the same time, and it had these hulking arms on the front of it and a mouth but no eyes. Blacker than black. How much more black could this creature be, Brandon? And the answer is none.
None more black.
None more black.
Which brings me into this clip, Jason, because this is, we talk about what the creatures look like. Let's listen to our characters describe what these creatures look like.
See? Is that a dog?
No.
No, that is not a dog.
That's black. Too black to see. That's the blackest black ever, fam. That's blacker than my cousin Femi.
Yeah, so they describe it, that's as black can be. That's blacker than my
cousin. Femi.
Yeah. It's okay, so this is a long shot, but I'm going for it. There is a stereotype, a horrible stereotype. It's like, you know, that old joke, it's like, I don't know, probably right out of the 50s, where it's like, hey, just get a guy to smile in the dark and you'll know he's a black guy, that kind of thing, right?
You think that's an indirect reference?
I feel like this creature's kind of a shot at that, because this movie deals heavily with race issues, but the character, the design of the character seems to me like a stereotype, because it is all black.
Yeah.
The teeth are the only things we see because they're like glowing.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the rest of it, whatever. But that just describes to me a horrible stereotype.
Could be. And that, interestingly, is the counterpoint to that is when John Boyega, who is, you know, Moses, is a understandably cynical character. And he says, like, you know, this is probably the government that's doing this. They, you know, they sent in crack to kill us. They sent in the police. And now they're going to kill all the black boys with these fucking aliens.
Let's take a listen to that scene, too.
No, I reckon, yeah. I reckon the feds sent them anyway. Government probably bred those creatures to kill black boys. First they sent drugs to the ends, then they sent guns, now they sent monsters to get us. They don't care, man. We ain't killing each other fast enough, so they decided to speed up the process.
So that's some shit right there. That goes into the whole thing about you know, the spread of crack in black communities. Jason, do you know a lot about that? About like the
well, I know that there's the idea that the government helped spread that for that reason. I don't know what the truth of that is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's clear that that was a substance that very directly affected that community.
Yeah, exactly. And they felt they were targeted.
And that's the thing, is that you have people that are kind of overall, like, because of their position, lower income, this is a cheaper drug. Like,
it's like
you don't hear about white people getting arrested for crack because they could afford to buy cocaine.
If you want evidence of that, listen to the Whitney Houston interview where she says, "Crack, I'm too rich to buy crack." Mm. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what she was offended by, just the money. But anyway, that's neither of us are with a point of view to elegantly, eloquently explain I don't want to say conspiracy, but you know, like the idea behind this whole conversation.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting thing to introduce, because then we think about the crack epidemic. We think about like, oh, well, you know, he might not be wrong.
Well, that's it. And given the way the system has kind of oppressed people of color for so long, that it's understandable that people would have these. If it's real or if it's not, I can understand why you would come up with that, or why that might seem, because yeah, it's like this government's been fucking you over. Why not? Why wouldn't they introduce a fucking drug in there to screw your community over?
Yeah. Why wouldn't they do this other thing? If they're willing to do this thing, why wouldn't they do this thing?
Yeah. And it's nice that the movie kind of takes an approach to this stuff, it could have easily been a very, like, an even more straightforward kind of action horror type comedy.
It could have been blaxploitation.
Yeah. Well, Jesus.
Honestly.
I mean, it could have gone down that road.
Or even, like, if we're not saying, like, full on, you know, blaxploitation, it could have just been a fun little horror movie in the hood.
It could have been a Guy Ritchie gangster take on it. It could have been, you know, without any. And then, nothing against Guy Ritchie, but just, like, you know, Guy Ritchie's not really a guy that delves into, like, heavy issues in his movies.
No, but he prompts discussion of those.
Certainly does. Certainly does.
See our episode on The Gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about John Boyega as well, because this is his breakthrough.
Yeah.
I think it might be his first role. His first major role.
I think it's his feature film debut anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he explodes onto the scene. You mentioned everyone being genuine, and he especially feels genuine. He never feels like he's acting. He never feels like he's trying to, like, draw attention to himself.
No, and he's playing this character that, you know, you look at and think, oh, this guy's a thug, but he's not just that. Like, he's not a two-dimensional representation. He's not a cartoon character. He's got depth to him. He seems like he's not stupid, you know. He's and he does ultimately want, I think, what's best for everybody, but also he's in a fight for survival too. I mean, he's from a, you know, he doesn't really have parents. He has an uncle that he lives with that he kind of is in and out.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever see him.
No, we don't. And the way the movie explains that too is another aspect of this movie that I really like, is that nothing feels heavy-handed.
No.
It's just kind of, he's just kind of like, yeah, sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. And then we move away from that scene.
We don't have a Will Smith-style fucking, like, why doesn't he love me, you know, kind of speech. We don't have that. We don't need it because that's not what this is about.
By the way, anytime I hear Will Smith speech, all I can think of is his performance in Concussion when he says, "Tell the truth. Tell the truth." It was in every trailer, and I laughed hard every time.
You thought his Nigerian accent was good?
Sure.
I think it's Nigerian. I hope I'm not.
It's one of those, like, you know, you watch a trailer for a movie that's clearly headed to the Oscars, and they do that, like, it's the Oscar clip of the trailer, right? That's the Oscar clip to me. That's like, his tears are forming in his eyes. He's like, "Tell the truth. Tell the truth."
I wonder about that movie. That movie kind of, did you ever hear, what's that FIFA movie?
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about? The one
United's,
that was United Passions?
Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah.
I think of that. Like, did the NFL help fund that movie?
Concussion? No.
Okay.
No.
It goes hard on them.
Oh, it goes hard on them. Okay, it's pretty good from what I remember. Okay. Will Smith was good in it. Anyway, we're not talking about Concussion.
Will Smith's great, though, so check him out if you haven't.
Yeah. Classic British actor. just like John Boyega. but yeah, so again, yeah, Boyega is... It makes an immediate impact.
Yeah, I mean, right out of the gate, he's great. I mean, I'm sure
natural
he's,
charisma.
I'm sure it's not the first thing he's ever acted in, but he clearly had gotten to a point where his talent was good. And then that transfer is great to Star Wars, and he's one of the best characters in that trilogy.
He is.
He does kind of get done dirty at the end of it. But.
Yeah, I mean that whole franchise, unfortunately, has kind of soured him on Hollywood for the most part.
And it's a shame because there was so much potential with that character, and he was great in
and
it.
And the first two movies built that up perfectly, and then the third one went.
That's why if you're going to do, okay, confidential to Disney, if you're going to do a Star Wars trilogy in the future, hire one director for all three. Just straight up. Because if nothing else, we'll get consistency.
Or do like the original trilogy and have someone overseeing the whole thing.
Yeah, have a...
Can have different directors because the original trilogy had different directors and George Lucas was producing everything.
And look, just straight up, the only guy over there that seems to know what they're doing, guy or lady... That seems to know what they're doing is Jon Favreau. So, you know, maybe let Jon Favreau
in. I like Rian Johnson. I'm not going to
Rian Johnson's good, too. Maybe, yeah, let Jon and Rian and Dave Filoni get together and put their heads together and come up with something
cool. Rian Johnson's got a new Star Wars trilogy, apparently. It's going to happen.
I'm excited to see that. I hope it's... I heard tell of an Old Republic trilogy, possibly. I wonder if maybe he'd have something to do with that.
I think he wants to get as far removed from and do his own thing as much as possible.
And I absolutely want to see that. I want to see him take his approach to it because we need new voices in the Star Wars. And we've seen it with Favreau and stuff, but this isn't a Star Wars.
No, I love how John Boyega in this movie just triggers a huge Star
Wars. Triggers Star Wars. Sorry, John. I know you're more than just Star Wars. And clearly we see it in this movie.
And more than meets the eye.
He's a transformer?
He might be.
Oh, what does he transform into? I hope he transforms into a Corvette.
Director Michael Bay.
Oh, that's not good.
No, he only transforms when he gets nervous. Okay, the prompter's not working. I guess I'll just wing it. That's my favorite Michael Bay quote. I can't do this.
What was he doing that he needed a prompter for? He's a director.
A very unsafe one, apparently, according to recent social media clips. Anyway.
Attack the Block. Attack the Block deserves our attention because it's a great movie.
It is great. Now, spoiler alert. what's another big thing you want to discuss, Jason? Oh, actually, continuing on from the race thing, because there's a little bit, it's just like an offline, but it makes me think of like it's a little shot at like white privilege. Because they're so eventually Samantha and the gang, they all end up together, you know, for survival, and they're hiding in the apartments. And she mentions something about how she has a boyfriend because one of the guys starts hitting on her. Yeah. And she's like, I have a boyfriend.
These fucking teenagers are just hitting on her.
Yeah. And she says something along the lines. He's like, oh, where's your boyfriend now? And she's like, well, he's in Ghana working for the Red Cross, you know, helping out, you know, with the Red Cross. And then one of the other kids says.
The white kid.
She says that to the white kid, yeah.
But isn't he the one that says, shouldn't she be in Britain helping British children?
Is it the white kid that says that?
No, maybe not.
Okay. I don't know. And one of the kids says, why isn't he in Britain? Oh, you know, not a nice enough suntan. which it goes into one of the critiques I've heard before where, like, you know, when you have people doing stuff overseas, it's like, are you doing that or are you doing that for the credit? Like, are you doing that for the look that it gives you as a you know, what is it called? What's the word I'm looking for?
As like a nice guy, a philanthropist.
Philanthropist, thank you. As like a philanthropist, it gives you. Not only do you get to look like a philanthropist, but you also get to go and have a nice tan and have a great vacation.
And there's the argument made too that by going to a different country, you're helping people that are less fortunate. Well, certainly there are people in Britain that need help. Britain is a first world country, as is Canada, as is United States, and it's different in a place like Ghana or you know, Burkina Faso, or a country that is much poorer.
I'm thinking of, like, if I saw, like, a picture of, like, a Paris Hilton with, like, a child, like, sitting on her shoulder or something. I'd be like, I don't know how much of that is genuine.
I'd like to think that she's nice, but I don't know. I don't think so.
Paris, at us on Twitter. Are you nice?
Don't be a coward, Paris. Come on our podcast and talk about a movie with
she's
us.
She's got a podcast right now.
Well, then come on our podcast.
Yeah, Paris.
Paris. We'll talk about an American in Paris.
American... Oh, not an American Werewolf in Paris?
No, just an American in Paris. I think that's a movie.
Yeah, thank God we're not talking about the other one. Not a good film. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Did you have something you wanted to...
Well,
we didn't really talk about Nick Frost in this movie.
Yes, let's talk about him. So he's like the local, like, bigwig, I guess, the drug guy.
Well, he's not the bigwig. No. Because we meet the big... We haven't talked about him yet either, but Nick Frost is a drug dealer.
He's a drug dealer. He has the penthouse at the top of the council estate, so he's got that going for him. I guess, increases his stature simply because he's on top. He also has a weed room, and he's working with another guy whose name escapes me.
Bruzy. We actually, you know what? I want to listen to a scene between him and Bruzy because this is kind of a comedy, sort of, but they are the comic relief. They're the most outwardly funny characters.
Absolutely, yeah. They're
and
quite great.
This is after the boys have killed this first alien and delivered it to this place. And they're just, Nick Frost, Ron, and Bruzy are just kind of staring at it.
No bloody clue. Maybe there was a party at the zoo and a monkey fucked a fish.
I saw them with it on the way up. Thought it was something with one of the fun fair.
Smells real though, didn't it? Smells like a shit did a shit. You want to buy a bit of weed then?
Yeah.
That's so fucking real too. The no matter what happens, it's just like, do you want to buy some weed? Well, yeah, that's why I'm here. and again, like, this is very much a realistic drug dealer's place. You go over, you buy your weed. Everybody's sitting around. You smoke some of the weed with the dealer before you go. Like, it's a whole social occasion. It's all very authentic.
I mean, keep in mind though, the people that are smoking weed in this movie are definitely under 18.
Oh yeah, no, they're like all 15 and 16.
Yeah,
like.
yeah. Nick Frost. Great in Edgar Wright films.
Absolutely.
Great in everything. Great in this. Mm-hmm. You are a noble scholar.
We salute you, sir.
Yeah.
For normal looking dudes everywhere, we salute you.
I mentioned that I was surprised that some of the kids are getting killed off, like some of the teenagers. Mm. But I was also surprised overall by, like, the low body count, though. Honestly, when you get down to it.
Yeah, it was one of those things, like, was this movie rated R, I assume?
It was R, oh yeah. Oh, they say fuck, blood. Like, every second word, yeah.
Because this movie had, in fact, I will compare it to last week's film, Kingsman. And this movie kind of threw me off, because I got the sense, like, this movie really looks like it was based on a comic book. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was.
No, I don't think
But it has the look of that. Like, the colors are very bright and stark. Like, everybody kind of has their, like, silhouette, their color scheme. Like Moses, I'm thinking Moses specifically with the black hat with the red brim. Like that's clearly what helps define who he is as mm-hmm. far as a character.
I mean, his name is Moses.
Yeah, Moses. That's pretty cool.
He's pretty much like, hey, aliens, let my people go, right?
Yeah, so I was a little shocked going into it because I guess, again, the violence was a little more than I expected. Same with Kingsman. Like, I thought this was more like kind of PG-13.
But this kind of eased you into it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty brutal. And Moses, of course, gets arrested at one point, too, because they don't seem to know, the police, that there's an alien invasion going on. They haven't figured that out yet. So,
yeah.
And, of course, Jodie Whittaker had reported him to the police and mentioned that hat with the red brim. And so they finally notice them and they chase them down. And, of course, Moses' bike breaks and he gets arrested. And that's when we get to where we first actually get to see the aliens at their full strength, as it were.
Yes. And that also begins, this movie has a pretty sharp critique of the police throughout. I mean, obviously, we hear this kid saying, like, you know, fuck the police,
yeah.
obviously. But we also see their kind of their incompetence, too. Yeah. And not at like a cartoony level,
no.
but at a level that's like, it's just doing a solid job at satirizing now, that, especially, we'll talk about it.
Now, don't get me wrong.
Hold on, I just want to say that we'll talk about it a little later, but the ending especially.
Now, don't get me wrong. When they arrest Moses, it's all legit.
Mm.
He did all the things that they're, like, arresting him for.
Sure.
So let's just keep that clear, too.
Of course.
But, they get him in the van and stuff, and then the aliens attack and murder these two police officers. And, of course, now Moses is obviously concerned that now that's on him. They're going to think he did it. But so they get in, they get the van going. It's Jodie Whittaker it's not Jodie Whittaker. Jodie Whittaker's in the van too, but she's not locked up in it. He's yeah. locked up in it. The dude on the scooter comes down, gets into the, you know, gets through the aliens, gets in there, and the other boys throw a firework down, scare off the aliens, and they fucking get the van going and get out of there. Then they crash in to Bruzy. Is that not Bruzy? What's the other guy's name?
So we'll talk about, like, we mentioned that Nick Frost is the drug dealer,
yes.
but Hi-Hat is the scary drug lord, like I would say.
He's the guy that he multiple times says this is his block.
Yeah.
So
when they crash into him, they have this little standoff.
Bear creatures chasing us! Big alien gorilla wolf motherfuckers, I swear! Some creature fell from outer space and jumped Moses, so we bought it. And now his prison have come down in force blood. Then Moses got shifted by the feds, and then things attacked the bully van and savaged the Bluefoot, so we jacked the van. We're running for our lives now, cuz. Believe!
Jack a bully van. Crash it into my whip. Then chat shit about aliens to me.
This is making me nervous, blood. That boy stole off, you know. Police are going to be all over this.
Trying to snake me. You want to bring arms to me now? You want to murk me? You want a war with me?
Listen to me, cuz. I'm not even lying. If we was making it up, don't you think we'd make up something a bit better than aliens?
Say that word one more time.
I told you, bruv. On the roof if you don't believe me.
What? What's on the roof?
One of them...
Say it.
One of them big gorilla wolf motherfuckers.
I also love the fact that they call them the big gorilla wolf motherfuckers yes. for most of the movie. But yeah, that guy is like, but he's almost like parody level, right?
Mm.
Is he? You think that it's conscious?
He's a bit extreme for sure. He's pretty crazy.
Because everything seems pretty genuine.
But he's also too representative of, again, what I was saying earlier about like the kids accept this immediately. He doesn't because he's older. He's an adult, right?
Yeah,
this sounds fucking insane to him that these young kids are coming up and being like, yeah, there's aliens, bruv. And he's like, what? What are you trying to even do to me?
And he gets to be like pretty tough. Like he gets to survive an elevator attack at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, he dies a Colonel Rhodes death from Day of the Dead. He gets ripped apart.
Because he's being an asshole. He wants to kill them and he doesn't notice the aliens behind him. And then they all run away and the aliens eat him. They rip his face. They rip his fucking face off.
They rip his face off.
It's like some Day of the Dead shit. It's or Dawn of the Dead or whatever of the Dead.
Day of the Dead.
Night of the Living Dead.
Get out of
here. What's the other one? Land of the Dead.
By the way, that's one of them. Yeah. By the way, you were talking about the how this isn't based on like a book or anything like that or source material. The source material for this movie was that Joe Cornish got mugged one night, and he just added this like science fiction angle into the plot.
I thought you were gonna say he got mugged and then had to fight some aliens with the muggers.
No, unfortunately not.
That's a shame.
I also want to mention, too, because this movie is set in a fictional neighborhood.
Oh.
The name of the neighborhood is not real. It's said to be the London district of Brixton. So it's actually a composite of various council estates across London. Actually, Joe Cornish said, "We wanted to stamp a clear layout on the audience's minds early, and since we couldn't afford to show an aerial shot of the estate as it doesn't exist, the way to show it was by showing this top shot of the map at the very beginning of the film."
Okay. Cool.
So there you go. He's a liar and a director. One big scene I want to point out, too, is the scene that's like in the fog. I think it's because all the fire extinguishers have gone off or something. What is that scene? They're in the apartment. They're all walking through, and it's very hazy.
Oh, yeah. Did they maybe set off some fireworks?
I think so. Yeah.
Off fireworks. So, yeah, it's very smoky and yeah.
That scene stands out for me because it's like it reminds me of like The Mist or like, okay, it's crazy, I know. But the scene reminded me of Boogie Nights. And the reason it reminded me of Boogie Nights is because there's tension, and then every so often you hear another firecracker going off, and all I could think of was that scene in Boogie Nights where they're in like the
Alfred Molina's house,
and the Chinese guy is just throwing firecrackers
Sister
outside.
Sister Christian, know the time has
Guys,
come.
You want to study like a scene isolated by itself as a great scene? Watch that scene in Boogie Nights. It's one of the best scenes ever.
Everything in that scene, the acting, the use of the soundtrack with that song, the guy throwing the fireworks, like everything is great.
Yeah, so that just, to me, that just creates a lot of tension. You don't really know what's going to happen. Should we talk about the kids? We didn't really talk about the kids. It was like Probs and Mayhem. Is that their names? They're, I guess, gonna end up like what our main characters are if they continue down that path, but they kind of get shit done eventually. Right,
yeah, no, absolutely. That super soaker, they never say what it's filled with, but I'm pretty sure it's piss.
I just thought it was gasoline.
Oh,
because then they light that dude on fire.
Oh, okay, so maybe it is gas. Maybe. I missed that part.
Walked out of the room. I also just want to talk a little bit too about the creatures themselves, because the director had basically two men in gorilla-like suits with animatronic jaws, and then in post-production all they did was add like the spiky fur and the claws and some of the extra rows of jaws and a little bit of their movement. So it's a mix of practical and digital, and I think it works out pretty well.
Yeah, no, they look great. They look great. And then partly it helps that they're so black because you can't really see the detail of them, so it makes them even easier, I suppose, to render.
Yeah, right. And they're also simplistic, right? It's not these science fiction films. I feel a lot of times you have these creatures that are over-designed, you know, just for the sake of, oh, look at what we can do. These creatures feel a lot more, I mean, it's weird to say grounded, but they feel more grounded. Also, apparently the noise made by the creatures was a combination of dolphin sonar mixed digitally with the grunts and snarls of like dozens of animals and a woman screaming. Yeah. And they put all that together. Dolphin sonar, grunts of animals, a woman screaming.
That's a good combination. That calls back to like how they built sound effects for Star Wars, like for the, back to Star Wars again, but like for the TIE fighter and stuff, using different things.
And the puppet, the alien at the beginning that they kill, it is a puppet. And apparently it terrified the cast because they didn't know that it wasn't going to be an effect until the last minute.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Let's get to the ending.
Sure.
The ending of the film, Jason. The ending of the film.
Yes.
John Boyega realizes that the aliens are attracted to the scent. I think they're attracted to the scent of the first one he killed, right? Because it's like on him. And so he uses that to run through the apartment block, lures all these aliens over, and kills them. It has Jodie Whittaker go in and turn on the gas first, right? Because they don't look at her. They don't give her a sideways look because she doesn't smell like them.
No.
And she turns on the gas. He goes. He lures them over. Shoots that firecracker. Boom.
Boom. Blows them the fuck out.
And then he flies out
and
going to be a hero.
He's going to be a hero. Well, he gets shot out of the apartment, but manages to hold on to a Union Jack flag.
Which is pretty down. Rich.
My immediate thought was, though, nationalism is different in the rest of the world than in the United States. And somebody having a British flag out their apartment, I'm wondering if John Boyega would really want to climb into their apartment. But you know what? He's alive, so he wins.
He does, until he gets outside and
he's outside and they arrest
the
him.
Whole gang is arrested. And I mean, again, we talked a little bit about the police critique. I mean, this does speak to that a little bit. And it also like has a major character change because people are like, no, he saved us. He literally almost gave his life to stop these aliens. And they all start chanting his name. And the movie ends like that. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if they're going to go to jail. You don't know if they're going to, you know, get out, get acquitted or whatever. And it just kind of ends on that open ending, sort of.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know exactly where it's going. It does leave it open for a sequel if they so choose, if they ever wanted to do one. But
attack more blocks.
That's right.
Yeah, it spoke to me as a just because all this shit we've gone through over the last couple of years with the police immediately thinking that he was the one who did everything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It has that feeling, and unfortunately, has aged well because they're still obviously dealing with those issues.
Yeah.
For years and years and years and years and years. But Jason, maybe we should take a break and we will come back with some bits and bobbies.
Age of Radio.
It's time for bits and bobs. Attack the bits and bobs. Your host is Jason. And sometimes Brandon, it's time for bits and bobs. Bits and bobs.
Nice crane shot right out of the gate. Very pretty.
Mm.
Is this taking place on Guy Fawkes Day? Seems to be, because there's all these fireworks around. That seems to be the most fireworky day in Britain.
Is that Edward Fawkes' brother?
No, it's spelled F-A-W-K-E-S.
That's not the answer to my question.
Well, you can figure that out.
With the thick accents that we get in this movie, for a while I was almost reminded of Clockwork Orange when they were talking amongst themselves, like the gang, because it sounded like that. It didn't sound made up, but a very distinct lingo.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah, dialect.
I mean, in a youth gang certainly is going to call back to that.
Certainly, these kids are not as horrible as
not quite. They're not. They're more into mugging than a bit of the old ultra violence and all
that. Singing in the rain, assaults.
The soundtrack in this movie is fucking banging. It's a great, great score. It's very much like a mashup of kind of traditional orchestral, but then you've got like electronica in there. You've got like drum and bass. And I think it's trying to really pin down kind of the sound of this neighborhood. And it's really good. I really like it.
There was a maybe racist grandma in this movie. Because when her character's name is Samantha, and that's the first time I've said it.
Yeah.
Good job, Brendan. Samantha, Jodie Whittaker, when she's like mugged and she is like, this old woman like finds her and takes her back to her apartment to like warm up and everything. Yeah. She says something like, "They're monsters, all of them, aren't they?" And she's talking about gangs, but the way it sounds.
I thought she was talking about youth.
Oh,
like
maybe.
Kids. Like she's talking about kids being monsters.
Two different things.
Yeah. You just see all these kids attacking you.
I thought she was just doing a typical racist old granny thing.
Yeah.
Which is funny that she calls them monsters, by the way, based on, that there's actual monsters in this movie.
I like the effect when Bruzy, and I know this is done in other movies, that's Bruzy, right?
Stoner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's listening to the whoop, whoop, like that rap
That's the
song.
Sound of the police!
Yeah. Whoop, whoop. He's listening to that, and then he takes his earbuds out, and the stereo track, one track goes away when he takes it out, and then he takes the other one out, and it goes away, and it's very muted. Like, I just love shit like that. Like,
well, that's very Baby Driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is Moses a stoic character, or is he just trying to deal with the trauma of this event? Like, I mean, we see him before. I get the sense that he's a pretty serious guy.
He is, and you don't see him smile too often. No. It happens a few times.
Yeah, he has a few moments, but he seems pretty serious compared to the rest of them.
And he's very looked up to as a leader. Yeah. Like they don't step to him at all.
Yeah, there's no question of his leadership in the movie. There's no challenges to it. He is very much the guy that's in charge.
Yeah, and I mean, again, go back to his name. I mean, his name is Moses. Like that's a clear decision
he's
made by the filmmakers.
He's leading these kids through the desert of southern London.
They're gonna part the red alien.
These Red Sea pedestrians.
Yes, it's a good folk band.
Yeah. Let's see. When they go to get their weapons, I think one grabs a machete. He just grabs a machete out of his house. One grabs a katana. One, I think the Briggs. I think he grabs like a fucking chain from under the sink. She's like, no, Mom, I'll be back in 10 minutes. Oh, I love it.
I love the debate when they debate about what to do with the alien corpse, like what media they're going to send it to, how much they're going to make, yeah. that kind of thing. It's like, that's such a conversation that kids would have.
Exactly, like, exactly. Oh, we can parlay this into a career. Yeah. It was a good chase with the alien chasing after them. Yeah, at one point, they steal some bikes. They get a bunch of motorbikes, but not for all of them. So two of them have to ride on a bicycle together while the other guys have gas-powered vehicles. And that's when the chase is going on.
Also, like, too, how you could argue that you could see this movie just as a gang against another gang. Like, the aliens could just easily be another gang.
Yeah, they are. They're invading their territory on the block. Yeah. That's why they're dealing with them, right?
Like, it's sci-fi in the sense that they are aliens, but when you get down to it, it's really just gang warfare. Like, it's just a gang against another gang.
Yeah. Jodie Whittaker's character, first off, I love that they re-traumatize her. So they go into her apartment randomly, and she's there. And, of course, this poor woman has already been through the ringer. But also, her character is weird in this movie because she seems to be like the white lady that can kind of put in a good word by the end of it. Like, at the end of it, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, these guys saved me. As if, like, the cops would be like, oh, well, if that's the case, then we probably should just release them.
The white lady told us
they saved her. So,
well,
they're cool.
You know, we say that jokingly, but it's probably not far from the truth, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nice that she put in the word for them, even though she really didn't have to, considering they did pull a knife on her in the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
I wouldn't.
But I think she also, like, having spent, I mean, when you spend time with someone, you get to know someone, right?
You get to humanize them. And they did save her life a couple times. So.
And there's some moments, it's subtle, because they a lot of times in this movie, they do go for subtlety. But there's moments in that are subtle, that, like, when you see John Boyega kind of being chastised by the rest of the group for pulling a knife on her, like we heard that scene earlier on. He kind of has this look on his face, and she kind of glances at him a little bit, like, sideways, you know, like, oh, I kind of understand what's up. Like, people expected more of you, and this is what you've done. Because that's what I get. This is the vibe I get. Because they're like, man, what's wrong? Like, why do you even do this? Like, you don't need to do this.
Yeah, you're clearly smarter than this.
Yeah, and I mean, when he goes in to see Hi-Hat, that drug dealer, and he's like, hey, unload some white for me.
Yeah, exactly. He's getting into the hardcore shit, and they're like, that's like a promotion.
Yeah, and they're all proud of him and stuff, and he smiles, but, you know, I think deep down there's some pain there.
Yeah, having to move that shit.
Well, no, I just mean the pain of, like, this is the life he's in.
Yeah. Yeah, they call her a potty mouth at one point because she keeps saying fuck.
Oh, to Jodie Whittaker?
Yeah.
I like how, too, that one of their issues is that none of them have enough data or texts. Like, they're always like, oh, I don't got any credits and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's actually reflective, I think, more of how the cell phone system worked in Britain at that time. And, you know, 2011, like, still that was... Because Europe's had more... I would say Europe's had a more steady cell phone kind of coverage for a long time, but they also have a much more, like... Or at least at the time had a much more monetized version, because I feel like we went to unlimited here pretty quick.
Yeah.
But it was still an issue over there. So, yes, that is definitely a thing that a kid in 2011 would be worried about, how many texts they have left. when they kill one of the aliens, they say Tango neutralized, which I thought was funny because that's a very video gamey thing. And they do make references to, like, you should go home and just play FIFA throughout the movie because they're teenagers. Of course they play video games.
Unite your passions. Make them united passions.
That's right. Unite those passions together with Tim. What's his name? Tim.
Thomerson.
No, it was Alan. In Reservoir Dogs.
Bacon.
Yeah, Tim Bacon. Good old Tim Bacon.
Tim Roth.
Tim Roth, that's the guy. He was in United Passions, right? Does he play Seth Blatter, I think?
Seth Blatter?
Seth Blatter.
His last name is Blatter?
Blatter or Blather, something like that.
I have no idea.
He's a fucking scumbag.
Tim Roth?
No. Tim Roth's fine. Seth Blatter is a scumbag.
I was like, you, sir, can leave.
We may very well get sued by FIFA for that, but I'm saying it. Fuck you, Seth Blatter. I don't even know shit about football. They kill the weeb.
Go on.
Our friend with the scooter, they kill him first, and his head gets popped off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty gruesome.
And then the other dude gets killed in the hallway pretty brutally, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they all get... And the fat dude what's his name's buddy? The top guy, the... What's his
name? Hi-Hat.
Hi-Hat, yeah. Hi-Hat's a henchman, is this big fat dude, and they send him out to check to see, and he's like, oh, there's nothing wrong, and then he immediately gets attacked.
I'm just relieved Nick Frost made it through this movie.
Yeah, no, he actually, he survived. It was good. I'm glad to see him. He's not in any other form. And then they learn that fireworks can, they actually learn a lot in the course of this movie. They learn fireworks can stun these things or scare them off. They learn they can kill the fucking things because Moses stabs one with a katana through the head.
Yeah.
Or what they assume is the head. So they actually do a lot of good work in this movie, data that is necessary for the police and military later on if this becomes a bigger problem in a future possible sequel.
But, yeah, I was going to say, for this one, Moses took care of it.
I like that there's like the smart kid and he wears glasses so that we know he's the smart kid.
I like how that's your note.
Yep. And then he gets pinched. Poor guy. They tore the other guy's face off. I like it. So Bruzy's the one, you know, this dumb stoner rich kid, which I love. I think he's such a great character in this movie because he is. I went to school with people like that, like that, you know, that they, the parents had enough money to send him to school and they just spent their time doing drugs and just, you know, being scumbags. And Bruzy is exactly that. But he's also smart enough that he understands that he's the guy that figures out this is probably like a reproduction thing. Like, you've got pheromones on you. We can see it under the UV light. Maybe that's what they're attracted to. That's why they keep coming after us. So he's the guy that kind of clicks in the thing they need to know to be able to deal with them.
Well, he's all about the nature shows.
Yeah, exactly. He loves, who doesn't love getting stoned and watching fucking Planet Earth? I know I do. And I love the line where they ask him something. I forget what the exact line is, but then he goes, I'd be able to tell you I wasn't so profoundly stoned.
Yeah. Is that your second favorite line about being drunk and stoned after Hugh Grant's line in The Remains of the Day? I could explain it to you if I wasn't so drunk.
Hugh Grant's line in The Remains of the Day.
Yeah, I think it's his line.
Is Hugh Grant in The Remains of the Day?
That's the one with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one who says it.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
Yeah, it's Hugh Grant.
Clearly.
We did it for this podcast, Jason.
I know we did. But yeah, I like that she does, Jodie Whittaker pulls a video game move and slips by them in stealth mode. And they don't smell her.
Well, yeah, because that's when they find out that the aliens are only attracted to them because of the pheromones that are all over John Boyega's shirt.
She's like a fucking champ. And that's pretty much all I have. And the white lady will vouch for them. And at the end, the kid's going, brap, brap, makes me laugh.
Yeah. So this movie was very well received, mm-hmm. critically acclaimed, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. The website /film lists it as a true cult classic, or I guess a future cult classic. Mm. Roger Ebert, good old Rog.
Before he passed, good. I'm glad he got to review this movie.
Yeah, he praised the film's use of character development and the performance given by Boyega. Scott Wampler of The Examiner said it was the best film of the 2011 film festival season and likened it to other debuts like Neil Blomkamp's District 9 mm-hmm. and Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs.
Wow. Strong words. District 9, by the way, fantastic movie.
Yes. On the other side, Mark Kermode kind of gave a mixed review. He said he did not dislike the film, but he wanted it to be funnier and he needed it to be scarier. Okay, so yeah. In a 2017 retrospective, Tom Phillip, writing for GQ, Tom Phillip, not the WWE announcer, Tom Phillips.
Is that Todd Phillips?
No, there's a Tom Phillips.
Okay.
There was a Todd. There's both. Tom Phillips said that it's one of the most confidently delivered debut feature films in recent memory and still stands out as one of the best genre mashup films of the decade. And we talked about how it established Boyega. But it kind of launched Jodie Whittaker, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
I mean, she's not as much of a household name as he was because, obviously, of Star Wars, but...
But she certainly is a household name in the UK now.
Yes, we should note one thing that I've learned on this podcast is that there are people that I had never heard of, huge in other places.
Yeah. I highly recommend Brendan if you're ever bored.
You highly recommend Brendan?
I highly recommend Brendan if you're bored. But for Brendan, I highly recommend if he is bored. Go on YouTube sometime and look up shows like 8 out of 10 Cats or QI or The Last Leg. They're these British panel shows, and you get introduced to a lot of really funny British comedians who we have no idea who they are over here because they never are on anything in American Canadian media.
Yeah.
You know, guys like, or friends that you miss, like Rich Hall.
Yes, of course. Saturday Night Live's Rich Hall.
Absolutely.
And not necessarily the news. Well, I mean, honestly, if you look at it from the other perspective, it's not that much different. How many Americans do you see go to Britain and do, like, shows there?
Sometimes, but not always. Like, I've 8 out of 10 Cats actually had Carrie Fisher on.
But, I mean, right, how many times do you see them go there and have shows?
Yeah, I mean...
Jason Sudeikis doing that Ted Lasso show in the UK is, like, one of the few examples I've seen.
It is cool that that happened. And, yeah, it doesn't happen as much. It's more the other way around.
I haven't seen it. I heard it was really good.
And, unfortunately, it's usually seen as, like, it's a step down, right? You're going from American media into British media.
Which is weird.
Which is stupid, but, you know, it's too bad. I mean, like, David Cross did a show in England at one time. I forget what it was even called.
Arrested Development.
Sure, that's the one.
It was called Arrested Development.
Arrested Development in Surrey.
Surrey. I'm Paul. I'm angry.
They were poor and angry. Sorry, Surrey. I'm sure you're great.
I'm sure it's a wonderful place.
What were you going to say?
No, I just was talking about Surrey.
Okay. Okay, well, Jason, we come to the moment where we are going to decide this film's fate.
Yeah, well.
First of all, let's just say, what did you think of Attack the Block?
Great. Absolutely great. Enjoyed it every second of it. It was a great, enjoyable film. Everybody's good in it. It was fun. It was, I wouldn't say it was scary, but it was...
I don't think it was trying to be super
no,
scary.
No, yeah. It was a fun small-scale alien movie. And there's not a lot of those these days in the same way. You usually got to go big with that stuff. But it's kind of interesting to see something like that. And I enjoy, and especially, like I say, that just the visual callback to Out of This World really creeped me out. Because that alien always creeped me out as a kid. So yeah, anyways, great. Wonderful. Check it out. Brennan?
This is a pile of shit, man. No. No, this was a movie I presented to the show, so obviously, because I'm not Jason, mm-hmm. I actually had seen this movie.
Yes, absolutely.
But no, I really like it. It's a lot of fun. It's, again, it's cool to see someone before they were a star, mm-hmm. like before they were known,
yes.
And you can just see that. You can just see that star power just under the surface, right?
The talent is there.
It's like when you see a really old... shitty movie with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You're like, that guy doesn't just belong in this movie.
What shitty movies? Old shitty movies with Brad Pitt?
There's some early 90s stuff that he did.
Earth Girls Are Easy or something
no,
like that?
No, it's stuff that you've never heard okay. of, I swear. but I did manage to track down, and it's dicey. But anyway, it's great. It's yeah. fantastic. Yeah. Now, second part of that is, would you put this on a list in the future?
That's, you know what? I think it would definitely be in the running. I don't know that it would necessarily make it onto the list, but I think it would be definitely considered. It is a total package of a movie. I think it's very well made and it is representative and maybe certainly in a post 2000 list or a post 1999 list that incorporates the last 22 odd years. Yeah. I think if it's not on there, it certainly is in the running.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you mentioned the representation. I think that's important because yeah. I don't think we have enough representation
yeah,
on this
no,
list.
Yeah, no, it's a very white list for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah,
very white male list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly.
And to be fair, that's, you know, that's the industry for a lot of years. Like, the you yeah. know, white males run it. They get the biggest pieces of the pie, and that's represented in these lists. But, yeah, this would definitely help mix that up a bit. And it's great. It should be in the running.
Well, I mean, those white men can't jump, so what do they know?
That's right. They don't know nothing.
So yeah, I mean, I would say it's tough. I would say something like this, it would be fun to have it as a, like a late entry, you know, like a little ways down, but like a good little spot on the list.
I know one movie we could swap it out for.
It's not super influential, but I mean, it was made 10 years ago, so.
We have a lot. I have a lot of movies sitting in that English patient slot. A lot of movies.
I thought you were going to suggest The Servant.
No, that's great. That's fantastic, folks. Check The Servant out. Wonderful.
You know what? Switch out Lawrence of Arabia. Put in Attack the Block. Make English Patient the other 99 films. Let's get this done.
The perfect list.
Yes. Starring Gwyneth Paltrow. That's a perfect murder reference, Jason.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a candle reference, a vaginal candle reference.
On that note, speaking of vaginal candles, Jason, we should talk about what we're talking about next week. Which is not vaginal candles,
no.
Nor are we talking about goop. I've never seen this movie.
If Gwyneth Paltrow can get us a check in the next week, we will talk about goop. But if we don't, then we're not going to say nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Gwynny, make it happen.
Make it happen.
We're actually going to talk about, this is our final Brit pick. Probably final Brit pick. Maybe ever.
Maybe.
But we're going to talk about a movie that one of our listeners requested. That was Susie Cuthbert.
Now, is Susie related to Canadian royalty Alicia Cuthbert?
I'm assuming.
I have to hope.
I'm assuming everybody is.
I'm sure she was there on set while she was filming Popular Mechanics for Kids.
Or Girl Next Door. That would have been uncomfortable.
Yeah, I imagine.
But yeah, Susie Cuthbert, because we talked about a few Powell and Pressburger films.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought it would be cool if we took a look at the Powell and Pressburger film from 1945, I believe, called I Know Where I'm Going! It'd be the second exclamation mark movie we've talked about on this podcast,
wow.
Jason.
Yeah.
So let's do it. Let's talk about Powell and Pressburger's I Know Where I'm Going.
I'm interested to see it. If it's not on the list, we'll see if it should be.
Yeah. I don't know anything about it.
Me neither.
So there you go. There you have it. Jason, they can find us
on social media. They can find us on Facebook. Just search for Screen.
And Gundry.
You can find us on Twitter at BFI_pod. You can find us at our home base at ageofradio.org/forscreenandcountry.
That's where we are.
And Jason, where can they find you?
They can find me at Jason D. McLeod on Twitter. That is MACLEOD. As I've said before, the hottest retweets, the finest likes, the occasional, comments.
And every now and then, a few blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm coming for you, blah, blah, blah.
Canceled. Perfect. So on that note, then next week we'll talk about I Know Where I'm Going. But until then, I just have to say to you, God save the Queen.
Ooh, and God save that screen.
Oh, and for Screen and Country, I'm Brendan.
Ooh, baby, I'm Jason.
Yow!
We'll catch you next week on the pod.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the police.